high school and middle schoolers? Do we have anyone from student governments here? Yeah. High school, come on up.
Is it on now? It is. Okay. First of all, I'd like to apologize for my absence from the last meeting. Something came up really fast, so yeah, I'm here now. So far, everything is going very well for the school year. The high school is currently in rehearsal process for their fall play, The Miracle Worker, and the rehearsals are going well. I am in the cast, so I know. Certain clubs have actually come up to me and requested that I would bring up certain points. However, the points aren't clear that I should bring up to you. Student government would like to expand its horizons in the high school itself. The high school's Gay-Straight Alliance would like to expand their horizons as well as a few other clubs, and that will have to be run by you. And that is my report for today. Thank you for your time. Is anyone else coming up? Do I leave this on?
You can leave it on.
Just like put it here.
Middle school is next week or next meeting.
Good evening. My name is Gregory Keyes, and I am an eighth grader at POBMS. I am excited to be here to share with you all tonight about the events going on at our school. Student Council participated in the homecoming celebrations at the high school on October 16th. Although it was homecoming round two, the Hawk's Nest was filled with fans supporting POB as well as Breast Cancer Awareness and Stacy's Warriors. POBMS is always so grateful to be included in our high school events. POBMS celebrated Unity Day on Wednesday, October 21st. Together, as a student body, we wore orange to signify our commitment to those who have been bullied, and furthermore, that we are united to make a difference. MAP classes wrote their definition of unity on strips of paper. These papers were then made into a paper chain. All MAP paper chains were then linked to form one large chain of unity that hangs in our main lobby. It is a great reminder to our students and staff about the power of working together. Last week, we started our Spirit Card fundraiser, and it has been Minion Madness. We would like to give a huge thanks to our PTA parents for their help in running the sale. This year, we are working together with Matlin to raise enough money to build a well in a third world country. Students have the opportunity to forego their prizes and instead elect to give to the H2O for Life cause. Our sale will continue until Wednesday. Last Friday, our PTA Cookie Dough fundraiser culminated in our second annual Pie the Principal event. Miss Bowman and Mr. Dennis had no idea what they were in for. They were fantastic sports as they showed true commitment to the cause. Thank you to our fearless leaders. This week, we are pledging our support for National Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug and Violence Prevention Awareness through our annual Red Ribbon Week. Our health department has organized a drug-free spirit week with a dress-up theme each day. Students and staff use this week in celebration of living drug-free lives and making healthy choices. Matlin Middle School showed pride power during their annual Pride Week. Pride Week opened with a pep rally during the day and was followed by exciting activities which captured the character of our school. Students worked with their teachers creating team banners, decorating showcases, and participating in the Pride Power Challenge, which demonstrated the positive aspects of pride. The week concluded with an exciting Pride Night. Students competed in various games to win points for their team. Congratulations to all the new grade and school presidents. Elections were held during the first week of October. Thanks to the generosity of our Matlin families, we are able to have another successful Pride Card fundraiser. This year, along with the efforts of POBMS, Matlin was able to bring running water to an elementary school in Nigeria. By partnering with H2O for Life, we are able to make a difference in the lives of 450 elementary students. This week, student council members from Matlin and Leadership MAP students from POB are attending the Middle School Tolerance Day at the Holocaust Museum and will engage with other schools about what they need to do in order to be the change in their community. Matlin Service Club joined the fight against cancer. The Service Club sold pink ribbons, which were placed on the Tree of Hope. We were able to raise $210, which was donated to the American Cancer Society. October is National Bullying Prevention Month. Matlin Middle School and POBMS celebrated Unity Day on October 21st with a school-wide event, Project Connect. Students created a unity chain to send one large message to the school communities that we are united against bullying and united for kindness, acceptance, and inclusion. We are nearing the end of the first quarter and can't believe how fast this year is going. Thank you for your time, and we will see you next month.
Job well done. All right, we're going to jump a little out of order right now. We're going to go to new business 11.4, resolution to appoint deputy superintendent. As you probably are all aware at this point, Dr. Lewis was in an accident and suffered some injuries, and she's on the mend. And while she's on the mend, while she's able to consult and talk to us on the phone, and she's got all her faculties and all about her, she's not mobile. So she's not able to come into the district. So in light of that and in light of the outstanding job that she's just done throughout the years for us, we are appointing Jill as the deputy superintendent, as well as giving her a little extra recognition for the being the in-between between Lorna being not here and being here. So that's what that resolution is about. So do I have a motion to appoint Jill the deputy superintendent? Emily, Seth, discussion? All those in favor? Thank you. And now we'll resume our regularly scheduled meeting. Give me a sec, I'm sorry. Okay, we have a board, and we're going to do school board recognition. What?
Yeah, I'm
going to
do it.
Okay, yes.
Okay, please join me in celebrating school board recognition. Who are the people making up school boards? They are ordinary people who have an extraordinary dedication to our public schools. They are our neighbors and friends who play an integral part of assuring local control over our public schools. Our school board is no different. They spend enormous amounts of time and energy, often making personal sacrifices to assure that our district provides the best education possible for our children. And this past weekend, I was very fortunate, not this past weekend, last weekend, to spend some time with the school board at the school board convention. And I know as a leader in this district, I was so impressed by the involvement in these community members and the time given, not only preparing for those sessions, but also preparing to share out with all of you. I would like to thank each and every one of you for your dedication to our schools, and more importantly, to our children. Gary, Debbie, Ginger, Emily, Seth, Lauren, and Jody, we commend you for your tireless efforts and leadership, and for communicating the needs of the school district to the public and the public's expectations to the district. It is because of your hard work and dedication that we are able to provide a better tomorrow for our children. And we have several community members that would like to recognize your efforts tonight. So I'd like to start by inviting the Senior Citizens Organization up.
I'm Rachel Stiano, and I work for Mr. Millinery. Thank you so much. We want to thank everyone for everything they do, and I'd like to introduce my assistant, Anita Arrigo. You can come up. Lorraine Coronis, my recording secretary, and my secretary, Dorothy Morris. They would like to thank everybody and just tell you a few little words, what we do and why we thank you. And of course, you could see trick-or-treat is on the table. We now treat it. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to know what the trick is now, if we treated you. Anyway, I know many of you for many years. Seth, you don't remember where you know me from. I sat next to you, and we had a party, right? Okay. Thank you so very much. You've all been good to us, Ginger, Debbie. Maybe I'll see you at the bagel place one of these days, yeah.
There's a good chance.
Okay, thank you so much. What we do, we try to get our seniors active. We're going on a casino trip next week, November 4th. The bus is full, but we every once in a while get a cancellation. Anybody interested? They love casinos. We're going to a couple of shows. We're going to a couple of shows next year. One of them being On Your Feet, which you've probably all seen advertised. Ginger, you interested? Okay. Okay, and we have another show, but not too sure which one it's going to be because there's a lot of good ones out there. So we keep them busy. We went on a paddle boat this past summer, which was great at a bayshore. And the weather was nice, cooperative. The water was cooperative. So we do keep them busy and keep myself busy, too. Okay. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you very much. Our next unit is our PTA here to speak. I think Kathy Ray and her team.
Yeah, give one to everyone, and then if you could give those out to everyone up at the table. Yeah, great. Thank you. Hello, everyone. We like to thank you for all that you do, and we are handing out now a little Board of Education survival kit. So in there you'll find an almond joy for all the days when you feel like a nut.
I'm
Vanna. Yeah. There's also a Band-Aid for when things get a little rough. There's a battery to help you keep going and going and going and going. And a crayon to help make your day bright and cheerful. An eraser to remind you that everyone makes mistakes. Hand sanitizer to keep you healthy and happy. A highlighter to remind you to highlight the positive. Laffy Taffy to remind you to keep your sense of humor. Lifesaver to remind you that you are appreciated a whole lot. Marbles to replace the ones you might lose from time to time. A mint. A mint to thank you for your commitment. Mounds for the mounds of information that you give to us. A paperclip to help you hold it all together. A penny to remind you that you are a priceless part of our team. A rubber band to remind you to be flexible. A starburst to give you a burst of energy when you need it. Stickers to remind you that we all stick together.
Minion stickers.
And a Tootsie Roll to remind you to roll with the punches. Thank you very much.
And thank you for everyone.
I'd like to invite Senator Carl Marcolino up to address the board.
Good evening. And I thank you very much for what you do, because I've been in your shoes. I served 3 years on the Syosset School Board. Hardest job I ever had, worst pay I ever got for any work that I've ever done. Best gratification at the end of the day when we realized that we'd accomplished something and that children were better off for the work that we did, and the children of this school district are better off for the work that you do. And it's recognized by a lot of people. Not enough. Not enough people. Not enough people understand what you do. not enough people understand the hours that you put in on your own time on this business. I remember on our board, we would start out with a one meeting a month, and it turned out we were talking about nothing but bricks and mortar, repairing the roof, which always seemed to leak over the gym, fixing the windows and so forth and so on, the electric units, and the boiler always seemed to break down at the wrong time of the year, and we always had a problem. So several of us on the board said, you know, we're not talking about education. We're talking about bricks and mortar. This is not why we joined the school board. We want to talk about education. So we put a second meeting where we insisted from the superintendent that all we would talk about is educational programs. We wanted to see what was going on in the different departments and so forth. So we had two meetings a month, more time out and more time being spent. But it was valuable time for us because we learned more than we knew, and that was a good thing. And I think the more you can get out into the community as to what you do and the reasons you do it, the better off you are. I know you put out flyers. I'm sure you put out notices to everybody under the sun. And I'm sure you have a Facebook page and everybody tweets and all that other good stuff that a few years ago no one even thought about. But the more you can do to get the word out to the community as to what you're doing in here and why, it's important. They need to know. They need to know where their tax dollars are going. They need to know what's happening in those schools, what's happening in those buildings, and what's the meaning of it all. You're the only ones who really understand it, so you have to get the message out. We'll help you. I certainly will. But we need your help and your production. As many of you know, I'm the new chair of the Education Committee in the State Senate. You know the old saying, be careful what you ask for? I've been to Newburgh twice. We're traveling around the state now, visiting with school superintendents and school districts and getting to know the different areas of the state. Went into the city recently to meet with the school, with the small city school boards to get to know what their problems are and what's happening there. I'm going to meet next in a couple of days with Eastern Suffolk BOCES. We met with Western Suffolk BOCES, Western Nassau BOCES recently. We're going to meet again. There's more meetings than you ever thought about. But everywhere we go, and everywhere I go so far, I've heard nothing but praise for the members of the boards of education. That may sound like, oh, he's just blowing smoke. But it's not. It's the truth. Your work is respected. Your work is necessary and appreciated, even though you might not always get it. You might not always get that pat on the back. Sometimes you're going to get yelled at. First day after I got elected to school board, my neighbor who hadn't talked to me in 5 years started yelling at me because he was upset at the classroom his daughter was assigned to. So I said, Hank, I haven't talked to you in 5 years. Can I have 5 days to get to know what's going on in the district before you yell at me again? We became very good friends. And we found out why his daughter was assigned to that classroom, and it wasn't as bad as he thought, and she did very well. The name of the game is there's a lot of ignorance out there as to what you do. So help us get the word out in a positive vein. You have a lot of friends, even though we're in a state of turmoil right now in the education world. You're going to have a new chancellor. That just started today. I'd heard rumblings about that a while ago, but it came to fruition today. So there'll be changes there. There'll be new boards, new regents will be brought on board. And that's, again, change that's going to happen. The governor's appointed a commission on the Common Core. We know that's a problem. We know the rollout has been less than adequate in many cases and needs to be looked at, and the whole process needs to be reviewed. So we're pushing in a lot of ways. I have legislation in to build in a two-year moratorium while the commission that the governor has created does its work, presents a report back to him before January, which frankly is insufficient time to do what has to be done and do the kind of review that is necessary to be done on this problem. So we need a respite, and we need a break to stop the infighting that's going on and to bring everybody together towards one goal, and that is to support what you do here locally and what we do in the state. We've got to work together, and that's important. I know that's not a secret that I'm telling anybody. You know it. But we have to pass that word on to 211 other legislators who might not understand that, including a governor, who means well, but in all honesty, does not understand what you do here and does not understand what goes on in a classroom. Most people don't, who have not been there and have not seen it. They don't really understand. Kids learn differently in different classes. When I first was appointed and I first got my first job, I had three preparations in a row, all the same, same class, same subject matter, different classes. I said, I'm in hog heaven here. I could only do one lesson plan. I can use it three times. My heavens, what a break. Learned right away. First period worked out. Second period was a disaster. And the third period was so-so. Kids learn differently, different ways. So teachers have to learn and have to figure that out. That takes time to get the message and the word out. And they have to figure and adjust their planning to that. They need time for that. We need time to help you out, and we will do that. There's a lot of support for the school districts and the school boards in the legislature. We're going to keep on that support. We're going to keep the pressure on. I want to meet with you more than not. So the door is always open. Give us a call. If you have a question as to what's going on, call. We'll get you an answer. We will get you an answer, and that's a promise. So, again, thank you for what you do. And just remember, you have a friend in the New York State Senate. He's slightly chubby, and he's trying to lose some weight, which is why I stepped back when she passed by with the mounds, because I love those things. But just keep up the good work, and again, you have friends. So exercise your right. Ginger knows me for many, many years, more than either one of us wants to admit to. Children, mere children. Stay well. God bless you, each and every one of you. Keep doing good work.
Carl, thank you so much. And we take to heart everything you said there, and I see the bulldog on your chest, and we need you to be a bulldog for our kids. The bottom line is the lawmakers make the laws, and we need you to make the laws that are going to work out for our children and for our school boards to do what we need to do. So thank you very much.
Take care. I apologize. I've got to run to another piece.
Rebecca Alessia.
First rule of public speaking, be brief, no matter how long it takes you. It's hard for me to be brief when I come in to talk to my own school board because I'm here not only as a councilwoman, but also as a parent. It has been an amazing year for cooperative work between the town board and the school board. For those of you that don't know, this weekend we had a groundbreaking at the Challenger Field, which is being built by the town in conjunction with the school district as an improvement to Plainview School District property. For those of you not familiar with the Challenger Baseball League program, I will tell you that it is something incredible. It is a league for children who are differently abled. Some of them have physical limitations that mean they can't hit the ball or run the bases in the way that other children might be able to. The fields are adaptive. The children are allowed to play with buddies, so if they can't hit, a buddy hits for them. It is a really incredible, incredible program, and the field that we built in conjunction with the school district, or we are going to be building, was just announced and groundbroken this weekend. Ginger was there. It was an absolutely terrific, terrific event, and it's just one more example of what happens when we partner together between the town and the school district. I will also tell you that as a parent, this has been an absolutely incredible first year for my son. Sorry, a little challenging with the math. I'm sure that you guys are going to be hearing more about that later this evening. And I know these are curriculum issues that are facing every parent in the district. But what's really important is that the teachers, the staff, the administrators, our principal, everyone is simply remarkable here. There cannot be a better place. There cannot be a better place to raise a kid than here. I'm convinced of it, 100%. And I think that you guys do an amazing job. I think it's a pretty thankless job. My grandmother used to tell, it was like a Yiddish proverb, that if everyone in town came into the middle, put all their problems in the middle, and everybody looked at them, everyone would take their own back. So, you know, obviously, it's election season. It's a very trying and taxing time, but I'm still looking at my school board members and saying to myself, I don't know how you guys do it. You know, it's really incredible, the volunteerism and the devotion that you have to the community. And so on behalf of myself and Supervisor Venditto, the rest of the town board, we just want to say thank you for everything you do. You know, we say that volunteers don't work for free because they're worthless. They do it because they're priceless. So we thank you so much from our board to yours. Congratulations.
I just want to say something because Rebecca's being very modest. It was really her goal to get this field, and she was the one who really initiated it. And it is something that is so unique. And when you saw the children there, even though many of them were nonverbal children, just getting up to say the words, thank you, and to know that these kids are going to play a baseball game. It could take 5 hours. It could take two. It doesn't matter their age. They will never strike out. They will always be able to have somebody bat or get to a base. And to see the faces of the parents for these children, many of whom in other communities are not accepted or anything else, I just really want to say thank you because it was something that I know was your passion, absolutely, and it came to fruition. So thank you.
You're absolutely welcome. Thank you very much.
It should also be noted that the town is just voted on the comfort station, and I guess we'll have groundbreaking for that sometime in the near future, too, at the high school. So thank you for that. Another example of the town and the Board of Ed working together for the good of our community.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
Okay. I think Andy Bader is here from as the Water Commissioner, Plainview Water.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Andy Bader. I'm representing legislator Judy Jacobs, who could not be here tonight. And I have proclamations for all the board members. And on a personal note, I used to be a teacher. I spent 30 years in the classroom at Bryan High School in Queens. And I could tell you, one of the motivations for moving out here certainly was the schools. And the school, being in a high school in the city, versus being seeing the schools out here, there's a tremendous difference. And one of the good things is that we have parents who are running the school instead of we had a megalomaniac mayor running the schools. And so, you know, and I'm also thankful I had three children. My three children each graduated from this school district, and they're all doing very well. So I just want to thank you all for the job that you do, and on behalf of Nassau County Legislator Judy Jacobs, I have proclamations for each and every one of you, and again, I thank you so much.
And we have Angel Cepeda here, I think, representing Ed Mangano's office.
Let me just begin by saying that I definitely echo Senator Marcelino's thoughts on the hardest non-paying job ever, and that's that I doubled his. I did two terms, 6 years. So, thank you so much. It really is a privilege to be here with you tonight, representing the county executive, because it wasn't too long ago that I sat there, and I understand exactly the hard work that goes into running a district and what we do. And for the record, you know, and I've said this always, you know, I am so extremely proud of all the work that we did as a group and what we accomplished over those 6 years. It was difficult work, but I think that our district was the better for it, our community was the better for it, and it was all because we were able to collaborate together and work together as a team to make things happen. So, you know, thank you guys for all that. It was a wonderful time of my life in really giving back to the community in that sense. The other thing today, I'm not wearing a jacket. And that's an inside joke with the board, because I've never really had a picture taken without a suit jacket or other one, except for once. Except for once. And I've kept that picture. I've kept that picture because that's the only time that I've ever been in that situation. Well, today I came back from the legislature, from the Mets rally. We had a terrific time. Go Mets. We're really hoping that they'll come through and we'll have a championship this year. But getting back to this moment, on behalf of our county executive, I want to thank you for all the work that you do and the continued dedication that you have to this community and its children and its students and its parents. So thank you so much. I'd like to give you this proclamation, and I'd like to take a picture so that I could keep this one as well. Guy, can you do that?
Okay, next we have Josh Gulbert from our administrative unit.
Thank you so much, and it's my great pleasure to be here to speak on behalf of ASDA. You know, I've noticed over the years when I speak to friends and sometimes family and sometimes even school employees how little they know to touch on what Senator Marcelino said earlier, that people really don't understand what the Board of Education does. And many times people ask me, especially around election time, people start to see the flyers and they say, well, what does the board do exactly? And I talk about how they manage school policy, budget, hiring, legal issues, curricular goals, maintain the school buildings, and literally dozens of other things. I said they're really responsible at the end of the day for everything that goes on in the school district. And their next question is always the same, which is how much do they get paid? And I say nothing. They are volunteers. And they say, well, why on earth would anyone do that, you know, and take all of that on to be a volunteer? And I say, well, because the ones I know, they really care about the community in which they live, and they want the schools to be great, and they want the community to be strong. And then there's this awkward silence as we both try to think of some equally selfless thing that we do in our community that we could compare that to. And, of course, we can't think of anything. We, you know, just change the subject to fantasy football or something else. But it is a tremendous amount of just selfless work. And, you know, I get to see it firsthand all the time. And it's quite amazing. It's a huge, huge commitment for very little in return, a lot of headaches. And we thank you on behalf of ASDA, and I thank you on behalf of really everyone in the school district. It's just a tremendous, tremendous responsibility and a tremendous amount of work. And just a few comments about this board in particular that I've noticed over the years. And one is that it really has not changed, regardless of who's been on the board, is that this, as long as I've been here, which is, I think, 9 years this year, is that this is a board that really puts kids first. And I know that might sound obvious or cliche, but it shouldn't be taken for granted, because there are districts where board members are on the board, as you all know, around the state, around Long Island, for all kinds of reasons, many of them political. Many of them have all different kinds of agendas for wanting to be on the Board of Education. And over again and again, I have seen people wanting to be on this board really to make a difference, really to make improvements, really to want to see our schools be great. And that's something the community should really be grateful for and should not take for granted. Another thing I've noticed, that this is a district where it's not just about sports, it's not just about academics, it's not just about extracurricular, but it's a district that takes all of those things extremely seriously, that puts equal weight on all of those things, whether your student's, you know, a high-performing academic student or a student who's needing special services. This district takes that all very seriously. If you have children that really live for the plays or live for sports, this is a great place for them to come. No matter when someone alluded that earlier, there's no better place to be a student than here, because you can do anything here and really excel, find your niche, find people who are going to support, and find programs that are going to support you. Another thing that I've noticed is just your involvement. And again, this has really been the same as board members have changed. Many of you have been here as long as I have or longer. But as the board has changed, I just see the amount of board members that come to events, games, music events, performances, in-school programs, special programs, political events. It's incredible. The amount of things you do and the amount of things they do, it's not typical, you know, to see that kind of involvement. It's just really not. And if you've grown up here and only lived around here and only been to school around here, you don't realize that. It's not unusual for me to go to a concert and or show up at a football game where the marching band's playing and see not one, two, but several board members. And that's an incredible level of support that, again, we shouldn't really ever take for granted. There was one time when, you know, obviously our spring concerts occur in May, and there was a concert the night after the board election. And I remember seeing three board members at this concert after the election. I wanted to go up to them and say, "The election's over. You won. You know, no, you don't have to be here tonight." But they weren't. They were there for reasons that had nothing to do with that. They probably had that date on their calendar for months, and you know, just wanted to be there for the kids. And those are all just amazing things that I don't take for granted. I know my department doesn't take for granted, and I know ASDA doesn't take for granted. So we thank you for all that. So, in honor of all your hard work, you notice in the corner we have a beautiful plant, which we would like to donate to you, and to put in the boardroom or wherever you would like. But we're thinking in the atrium would be, you know, hopefully you can find a great spot for it. And Tom Schwartz helped pick it out. He wanted to say a couple of words about there's a little symbolism, a little symbolism aligned with the. I could, but I think you should.
Oh, thanks, Josh. Tom, I really appreciate it.
Tom was our plant man.
You really put me on the spot. Being the treasurer, they had asked me to go out and purchase a plant, so I know I would have brought here a redwood if it were up to me. I have no idea, so my wife actually helped picked it out, and we went to Hicks, and she picked out the flowers, and the flowers actually, every year they graduate, and new flowers grow. I believe they'll come up again in the spring, and it's meant to be symbolic for the new students that come into the Plainview School District. So that was the idea behind it. So you have to water it once every 2 weeks. I know Harriet's no longer here. I don't know who waters anymore. Thank you, Jean. So be mindful of that. But congratulations. Well deserved.
Congratulations. Thank you.
If I've missed anybody in the audience, give a shout out. Okay, good. All right, thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all so much. This past week, the board attended the NISBA convention. That's the New York School Boards Association. And in addition to the normal fanfare and lectures and activities you can participate in, something very, very special happened this year. NISBA makes proposals, and that's what the official body will be lobbying the governor, lawmakers for, as far as the agenda for what school boards feel we need throughout the state. And there was several resolutions that we felt as a district needed to be stronger for our children. So we proposed amendments to three of those, and I believe there's a handout that's got the three on there, but we're extremely proud that one of the amendments got passed, and that amendment had to do with testing specifically. And the amendment that we got passed, I just wanted to read it so it could be in the record, and I wanted to thank Lauren Saxteen, who is our voting delegate, who had to get up on there and lobby for us and put the good word in. And we were there in the grandstands rooting her on, but she had to do the heavy lifting. She did a great job. So what we passed was the following. Resolved that New York State School Boards Association shall advocate for an overhaul of the current inadequate testing system to more accurately measure achievements in skills, knowledge, and abilities, and it shall do this by A, working collaboratively with New York State Board of Regents and the New York State Department of Education to create tests that are developmentally appropriate, of reasonable length and frequency, and which avoids the unintended consequences of narrowing the curriculum, teaching to the test, reducing the love of learning, and undermining school climate. B, insisting that educators throughout the state be included in all aspects of the creation of standardized tests. And C, demanding that district personnel be permitted to examine test results, answer keys, and their students' responses so that educators can better assess what each child is learning in relation to what is being taught, and so that such tests can truly inform instruction. And this is now the official position of NISBA. So I'm very proud of us, and I hope you can all see that you have a Board of Ed that's fighting for you within the community and also fighting on a bigger level. Yeah. Jump in.
I just want to say it's very hard when you take a resolution and you change it and bring it to the floor. But what I will say is that it was overwhelmingly people in favor of it. And really what started at a resolutions dinner when the first resolution was read, our table and Gary and Jody really were very vocal about this didn't meet the needs of what we really wanted to say, that it didn't go far enough, how we're going to change it. You've heard us talk about it. So I just really want to thank everybody who helped put this together. And to Lauren, you don't understand the pressure that was on her in front of 400 other delegates, and it just went overwhelmingly in support of it, and how very proud we were, jumping up and down, taking pictures. We were not well-behaved.
Our two others didn't get the support we had hoped for. The one on APPR met with some resistance from some people who I think were very concerned with any kind of strong language that could potentially hurt, you know, negotiations of their ability to govern. And while we don't agree with that, we gave it a good fight. And then the third one we went after had to do with the opt-out and the rights of parents and is more importantly for school districts and our personnel to be protected, because when parents exercise their right to opt-out, there should be no negative consequences to us. And what was interesting about that vote is more people didn't vote than voted yes or no. You really saw that most of the boards just wanted to stay on the sidelines on that one at this time. And that was a little disappointing, because I think you got to be in it, and you got to – it's a Yiddish statement. I don't remember what it was, but it's kind of, you got to put your butt on the table. And yes, thank you very much. And would have liked to have seen some of the school board's delegates have a little stronger position either way than just not voting. But we got the one in, and we learned from it. And next time, if we see amendments or proposals, we're going to be a little more proactive. And hopefully next year we'll be able to have a couple of proposals that will be in the booklet that we can get even stronger support for. Seth?
I was just going to add that although there wasn't, you know, our amendments didn't get passed, there was a lot of debate, a lot of discussion, and the message to NISBA was loud and clear. The status quo isn't acceptable, and that message, I think, will be delivered to State Education Department, the regents, as well as, you know, as well as the legislators and the governor. So, you know, message was delivered. It wasn't exactly everything that we would have, you know, advocated for, but you saw from the year before to this year a huge change in the discussion and
And I think that the last amendment, people were very confused, because when they talked about opting out of tests, it was not our resolution. Another one that was an amendment to it basically said any test. And that was the one that just turned everybody off, because then they said, what about midterms? What about finals? What about regents? What about tests that teachers have to know how children are progressing? And that was the concern, and we think that that really tilted it the other way, that people just said, too many. So I think if we prepare our own for next year, we'll be very specific. Yeah.
Very important that occurred at the NISBA convention. That was a new director for all of NISBA was appointed, president, and it's Susan Bergstrom, who has been our director, our area director, as long as I've been on the Board of Ed, who's a Long Island person, and it's just great that, you know, not only that she's a great lady to have the job, and I think she's going to do a fantastic job with it, but that she brings that Long Island kind of background perspective with her, because I think one of the things that has gotten kind of lost in the shuffle between upstate, downstate, city schools, and other schools is that the schools on Long Island do a great job, and we have nothing to apologize for. And when you look at the total numbers, when the school state brags about their numbers, it's because the schools on Long Island that carry that load, and it's the achievement of our kids and kids in districts like ours. And we need to, it's good to know that there's going to be someone fighting for us who has our perspective a little bit better. And we congratulate her, and there's a letter that we wrote congratulating her that it's not here, but you'll get it in the minutes, Jean, just congratulating her on the position. So,
put it on our website.
Yes, and we'll put that on the website. So congratulations to her. We think that's a big move. And then the last thing was Commissioner Elia did a little dog and pony show. I was at a different event at that point, a different discussion at that, but I'll let anyone who wants to jump in and give a little perspective on what they took from that. Does anyone have any thoughts? Who was at the Commissioner Elliott? I know Lauren took a lot of notes, but she's not here. Okay.
Notes, so I'll read her notes.
Perfect.
She said that these are the topics that she touched on, that we need to do the right thing for children. She's a strong proponent of Common Core. However, she believes that we do not give our kids enough credit. We need to push our children. You can't get serious in ninth grade. We need high standards and high expectations for kids. However, the people implementing need the time to review them and implement them correctly. She spoke about how school board members, administrators, superintendents will be receiving a survey of how we are doing, and that's for parents, teachers as well. We need to prepare our kids so that they have lots of options in life. We need to look at the assessments. The assessments need to match what the teachers are teaching. Teachers will need to be at the forefront of the assessment planning and developing from now on. Testing as of the spring will be made shorter in length in both ELA and math. She spoke about computer-based testing. And she believes that assessments are important, not always formal. They need to inform what a child needs as a child moves forward with education. She also spoke a little bit about the teacher evaluation concerns. Teachers should be looking at growth scores as maybe I'm a great teacher, but I can always get better, and not as a negative tool. She states no one has been fired because of a growth score. She also said, I don't believe that children should be in the middle of politics. And lastly, she mentioned that special education children should be in a traditional classroom with support and should be assessed like every other child to see how they are learning. And she said that with computer-based testing, we will have the opportunity to change the way we can look at assessing specific children.
I wanted to talk about the I happened to run into Tim Kramer, who's the outgoing president of NISBA. I didn't run into him. I saw him out. He's the executive director. I'm sorry. And I wanted to talk to him about Algebra 2 and trig, and I know that's been a hot-button issue in this district. So I've been in touch with him and have also, at his suggestion, wrote to Regent Tillis and Commissioner Elia about many of the issues that have been arising, specifically about the effect of not cutting so much of the trigonometry from the current Algebra 2 course, and effects for students going on to, say, physics and calculus, and what happens when they take, for example, the ACT. So I, I he seemed appreciative that I included specifics, so I just wanted to mention that we're continuing to advocate on that subject.
Am I on? I wanted to give I sat in on Commissioner Ilya's presentation. I wanted to give my thoughts. I also watched the Regents meeting today. Very concerned. I felt just doesn't really understand what the problems are. You know, today she also reiterated how, you know, she doesn't see what the problem is with the growth score. I mean, you know, she obviously hasn't been paying attention to the Sherry Letterman case. You know, she obviously hasn't done her research as to why this model is so flawed. Even in her presentation at the NISBA conference, she spoke very little about the problems with APPR. I feel, you know, knowing that she has met with leaders of NYSAPE and the opt-out movement, that she just simply doesn't get it. She kept saying the tests are too short, tests are too long, we're going to make them shorter, and we're going to implement computer-based testing so that you get answers right away, as if that was going to be the be-all and end-all and fix the problem. And I'm just personally really disheartened. She's, in my opinion, a nicer version of John King. I don't think she's going to facilitate the kind of change that parents are demanding. Because I don't think she's really understanding what it is that parents are objecting to. If she thinks that the problem is that the tests are too long and they're not on the computer and that's going to solve everything, I don't know. I was very disheartened, very disheartened.
With that said, the commissioner does have the online survey that was referenced, and that all community members, teachers, parents, and educators can visit the website. I'm told that it's pretty lengthy, so once you start the process, I believe you need to see it through and can't stop along the way. But you can? Okay, so it's www.nysed.gov. And you can access it right off that website.
And she did say today, also during the meeting, that the intention was not for everybody to go on and evaluate every single standard, but for people to go on, teachers, parents, and talk simply, you know, evaluate the standards that they're familiar with. So third grade teachers should go on and do third grade standards. The survey wasn't intended. Exactly. The survey wasn't intended for everybody to go on and do every standard K through 12, for people to just go on. I went on and I did K through 4 because those are the ones that I've seen firsthand. But the goal wasn't for everybody to be expected to go in and evaluate every single standard in every single grade. Not that that makes it any easier, but at least it makes it a little shorter. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I do want to say is that during the question of her session, somebody got up and said, when you say the test is going to be shortened, what is the time frame you're talking about? And she would not answer the question whatsoever. She said, it will be shortened. And I think that a lot of people just walked out and sort of shrugged your shoulders a little bit because it just sounded like a lot of verbiage, but nothing, no concrete promises about real change and how it's going to be affecting our children. The other theme that you heard throughout was just a plea for public education to survive. And I think that that's a message that we saw part of Merrill Tisch's meeting at the beginning. And people, again, it's public education. That's what we're all about. That's why we were all there. And anything that really had to do with charter schools at the resolutions, giving charter schools more than public schools, they all went down. But it's something that we all have to fight for. In this day and age, you have to fight to hope that we'll have public schools and have the funding for them before they destroy it all.
We had a lot of sessions that people, the different board members attended. What we're going to do is, because we got a lot on the agenda, the next meeting, we're going to come back and talk to you about some of those things, because some of them will have impacts on policies and goals and decisions that will be driving the board, if not this year and future years. But we're going to push that off, and now we're going to go double back to finish up board announcements and superintendent's announcements. So board announcements. Emily.
I had two. One was to give a shout out to one of the teachers, Raymond Tesser, who was selected. He handles the social science research program at the high school, and out of all of the teachers who handle research in the country, he was one of 100 selected to go down to Washington, D.C., and out of that group, one of the few selected to actually lead and train, and he ran a breakout session on research ethics, which I thought was, you know, a really nice honor for him. So congratulations to him. And the other thing I just wanted to mention was, because it's education-related, was there's been a lot of nonsense spewed by certain, say, presidential candidates about autism and how it's spread and what it is. And there's a very fine book by Steve Silberman called Neurotribes that talks about the history of its definition, civil rights surrounding it, and education. So I thought, given the misinformation that's out there, I thought it was worth mentioning that book. It's very good, Neurotribes by Steve Silberman.
So three quick things. One is homecoming. I think since the last time we had a meeting, we had homecoming. It was the rescheduled homecoming. And despite the cold, POB community came out, and you weren't that cold. Well, despite the cold, the POB community was out there and exhibited great spirit, and as always, it was a great event. The second is a public service announcement. Tuesday is Election Day. I do this every year when it comes to Election Day. Your vote matters, so you know, voice your opinion and go out there and vote. Unfortunately, these days, a lot of people have a lot to say. They say it sometimes at meetings and sometimes on social media, or a lot on social media, but where it counts, they don't actually go to the, you know, they don't put their vote in the ballot box. So please go out there to vote. I know I'm probably preaching to the choir of those that are here, but, you know, tell your neighbor, remind them to vote, and put it as your Facebook status. And the third thing is you know, the Mets are in the World Series. So for those that are Mets fan, and even for those that aren't, you know, it's a great opportunity. They're in the World Series, but there's some great educational opportunities that come along with talking about Mets and baseball. And whether you're a Mets fan or a Yankees fan, there's so much about baseball that you could use this experience to talk to your children about, to talk to your students about, whether it's math and statistics, it's physics and science, you know, for historical poems and songs. There's great history behind not just the two teams that are there, but baseball in general. If people have seen the baseball, what's it called? The Nine Innings was by the same documentary. I forget who was the... Ken Burns. I mean, so it's a great opportunity to speak to your children, but also to your students. You know, obviously, you know, I think this is a great opportunity to use that, and I wanted to get in the minutes that Let's Go Mets. So, so I had to add that at the end. So.
Yes, I just wanted to echo some of the great events that were mentioned. Gregory Keyes did a great job. The kids spoke about Unity Day, homecoming, the marching band competition, lots of good stuff going on. Unfortunately, though, on Friday, we had one of our teachers, Judith Weisberg, pass away. Judith was battling an illness, but gave of herself even as we opened the school year this year. We truly appreciate all that she's done. She leaves behind a legacy of great work with our children. Judith has been a special education teacher in our district for 29 years. She came to Plainview Old Bethpage with experience in working with students with significant needs from the Woodward Center. In October of 1986, she was hired as a special education teacher at the Jamaica Avenue School. Following that, she was a regular substitute teacher at POB Middle and was then offered a tenure position as she spent the rest of her career at POB Middle. In addition, Judy worked in the summer special education program as a special education teacher for six continuous summers. She has provided outstanding instruction to our special education students. She's motivated them to reach their fullest potential and was dedicated to her students and to the BOB school district community. She has made a positive impact on many lives and will be remembered by all the work that she has done and for all who knew her. Tomorrow, I know we will have several community residents and teachers honoring her memory at a service tomorrow afternoon. So maybe we could have a moment of silence. Okay.
Thank you, everyone. That brings us to reports and discussions. Technology update. Ms. Ladico, you're up.
Well, that's coming up. I just want to echo the congratulations to the board recognition night. There we go. So tonight I'm going to give you an overview of technology in our district. This is an update of where we are today and where we would like to go. The first slide kind of gives you a picture of the equity across the district and the different categories of technology, instructional technology we have across the district. If you look at the first column, the first three bars, you'll see between the blue is JFK, red is the middle schools, and then you have the orange for the elementary. You see there's an equity. These are desktop computers that are tied into our wired network. And what you're going to notice from here to the next slide and what's been happening over the years is our mobile device numbers are significantly going up. And you'll see we'll surpass our desktops over the next 3 years. Going to take you through what we have for mobile devices for the high school. We have 300 currently in there, and I'll be going in more detail in the following slides. The 984, I just want to bring to your attention, these are purchases in progress. This reflects our one-to-one middle school initiative, which I'll talk about in detail in the coming slides. And then we have our elementary schools, which is mostly on carts, along with the high school. And these are other, which includes special ed for IEPs, AIS, and library computers. The next three bars reflect physical Wi-Fi access points, similar to the ones you see here in the boardroom. You see two inside the boardroom right now. This is going up significantly also over the years. You'll notice the high school and the middle school's numbers are very high now because we've implemented one access point in every classroom, and I'll talk more about that after. The 91 is a culmination of all the elementary schools together at this point, which is still the base wireless system where wireless access points are still in the hallways. But that's part of our plan, which you'll see later. Smart boards and projectors. We pretty much hit our, saturation point. Wherever one is needed, we continue. If one pops up, if a new classroom comes up, we get a smart board there if the teacher requests it and the principal approves it. So we're continuing that, and you'll see how our refresh cycles are reflected in the following slides also. So let's dig a little deeper into the high school. Currently, at POBJFK High School, we have 4 ASUS tablet carts. They are deployed. And I also included a column called funding, so you can see how we're purchasing these. And that was a lease purchase. And we have 2 Dell tablet carts, which were part of the Race to the Top funds that we received for the high school. We're in progress of purchasing 4 more ASUS tablets carts coming out of this year's technology budget. And that gives us the 300 tablets here on 10 carts. And the ratio is probably about 4 or 5 students per tablet right now at the high school. And that's wireless mobile devices. So I'm not talking about desktops in that number. At the elementary schools, you'll see the equity across the board. You have Parkway has 2 deployed, Stratford 2 deployed, Pasadena 2 deployed, and Old Bethpage 2 deployed currently. Purchases in progress. I just want to make a note with Pasadena. We do have a Google Chromebook cart that we piloted a couple of years ago, and that those tablets are still there. And that was a grant from the PTA. At Parkway Elementary School, where, as you can see at all the elementary schools, including the case center, we're purchasing more ASUS tablets for those buildings. And those purchases are in progress. And if you go over to the right, you could see the funding sources for each of those purchases. We're at 420 tablets, and that's on 14 carts. This year, that will be completed. Now, if you take a look at the middle schools, I put the middle school slide last because it's a little different because we have a one-to-one initiative that everybody's aware of that we're working on. So at the middle schools, I'm going to talk about the carts first. There are two Dell netbook carts in each of those buildings, and those are being upgraded with 2 Acer Chromebook carts per middle school, as you can see here. And that's being funded by the technology budget. Here is the one-to-one initiative for grades 5 and 6, and that we're going with the Chromebooks for that, and that gives you the numbers. That includes students and teacher tablets, and that gives you the 984 is the total of all the devices that we'll have here as we move through the year. That's correct, does not, right, because those are obsolete. Thank you. Down here, the library, we have 90 Chromebooks that are in progress. I got a note from Carolyn Talone yesterday. Those are going to be targeted toward the elementary schools. They were to be decided at that point here, but that is clarified. We have 70 Nooks in the secondary schools that have been deployed. They've been there. Teachers have been using them with the students. Reading AIS, this is a very exciting initiative that we implemented. It's iPads for grades 3 to 6 using eSpark, which I think you're a little bit familiar with. eSpark is a company that targets the right app for to fill the gap in learning that the student needs based on a basic assessment. And we're working on that implementation with Eileen and Nino's doing a fantastic job with that with the reading teachers. And there's the funding sources on the right. And special education, we've been using iPads for a number of years. Proloquo, there are certain apps that are excellent that support instruction for the students. It's driven by the IEPs, and it's 195. Someone have a question? Sorry, I thought I saw a hand. No.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry. And that's a total of 474. We've made some significant progress with our infrastructure. And I want to talk a little bit in depth about this so you understand exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it. As you know, as I explained with the elementary schools, we have base wireless systems that we had across the district for a number of years. But those systems were good basically for access, not for capacity. When you get into one-to-one programs where every student has a tablet, you need capacity, not just access, not just accessing a wireless access point to get to the internet that 1 or 2 or 10 or 15 kids may be doing, or 20 or 30. You need to have the capacity to handle multiple students accessing resources via Wi-Fi through our wide area network and wireless local area networks. So to do that, what we've completed to date, this is about a month ago, we've run the cables to every classroom in the high school and the middle schools. So that's, and we're meeting what's called the 802.11 AC spec for cabling, for data cabling. And it's category 6 cable, and it's run a certain way with the, a certain amount of cables to meet the capacity I was just talking about. So that's what I'm talking, that's what this reflects here. This is important. This is the first time our district ever qualified for category 2 funding in E-rate. It's unprecedented. And as soon as we saw that E-rate opened that window, because the incentive is for schools to get these cables in place, we went right for it, and we filed all the E-rate to pick up data cables. This is physical wire. What we've always qualified for E-rate in the past is telecommunications. That we always get and we continue to get. But this usually, certain districts, it... with higher free reduced lunch rates would qualify for this, but we did as because they made that possible for districts in our social economic status. Here are the Wi-Fi access points. What we also completed was the physical purchase and installation of the access points I pointed to on the ceiling. Those are all in place and ready to go. Where we can light them up, so to speak, or plug them into the network, we're doing that. But this is the key to our future here, is the network switches that we have to update and that we're updating. This is part of what we submitted for the bond. This is part of smart schools. So all this funding is in play, and it's how we're going to utilize that in our fiscal plan moving forward. So this has to do with port density. You need more ports because you have more wireless access points. And throughput. Right now we have a wireless, a wide area network and local area networks that are gigabit. The future is 10 gig. And that's really now. And that's what we're shooting for. We're trying to meet the 10 gig spec for throughput across the district. So where we're going, three-year technology plan overview. This gives you kind of a snapshot of the major, the main projects I just want to quickly highlight. As I mentioned before, you could see over the next 3 years to 2018, we're going to focus on our infrastructure for the secondary schools this year, next year, elementary schools. And the following year, we'll evaluate all of our networks. Along with that, over the next 3 years, is our bandwidth needs. And I want to really explain the difference between, we have our network bandwidth, but then we have our internet bandwidth, which is much different. That's the last step that goes out the door. That's like your cable modem out of your home. And that bandwidth, we're monitoring to see how much capacity we need on that to upgrade. As you know, we go through BOCES bow tie. We received a grant for fiber that went straight to BOCES from our district network operations center, Plainview or Bethpage Middle School, to BOCES, and we're leveraging that fiber with bow tie that at, when we need it, we could turn that bandwidth up as we need it. There's plenty of headroom, so to speak, to increase that bandwidth at any time on demand. And that also falls into the smart school specifications for bandwidth for our district. I spoke about our one-to-one initiatives. I just want to mention here that we are conducting exploration for other grade levels at this point. We are a registered Google Apps for Education school district, and there is training going on right now that's preceding our one-to-one implementation at the middle schools, which is grounded on the Google Apps for Education platform. And Ben Wiley is doing an excellent job with that, working with the middle school teachers right now and working with Alice and Chris. Along the way, we've had BYOD for the last 5 years. That's still in the buildings, and that will continue as we progress. Structural technology, as we presented last year, we're focusing on STEAM initiatives, which involve science, technology, engineering, arts, and we're moving forward, and mathematics, we're moving forward with that, and all of these different structural technology resources that support that, in addition to what the teachers do every day in the classroom with the students. You know all about Z-Space. I know it's been spoken about many times. The music labs, Josh and I have gone to the middle schools, have completed our walkthroughs with Soundtree. That's the vendor for these, for very advanced state-of-the-art music labs for the middle school students. The art labs have been upgraded to Adobe Creative Cloud. We enhanced our licensing structure at the high school, and we're working with that, continuing to that's on the computers, and we're working on the home license for the teachers to be able to utilize that. STEAM I spoke about, and coding was a big hit last year. The kids loved it, and robotics is always ongoing. You'll see in 2016-17, you know, there's always the budget cycle will continue in the refresh of interactive whiteboards in the projectors as they mature. Continue to refine and align our technology skills to student outcomes, professional development needs. Technology integration is key to everything we're talking about here to support student achievement. Mobile carts, I already spoke about. We're looking to scale that as needed, and we will monitor how many carts we need in alignment with as we roll out one-to-one devices. The network infrastructure plan, I presented that at the board meeting last year. That's in play, and that was entered into our bond, and our smart schools funds are going to be supporting that. Human infrastructure, we have upgraded our technicians to 8 technicians, and we still have our 9 computer aides, which are essential to keeping technology working inside the classrooms to support instruction. And the computer aides also were essential. After the abatements were completed, we were able to get the computer aides into the buildings to make certain that the computers were working in every classroom, because a lot of computers were unplugged as the rooms were abated. Professional development is key to everything that we do. The focus is on digital learning. As you know, we have a 0.5, I believe, a digital learning position in the district now, and Ben is working with the teachers during the school day with that. We have model schools, which supports us, and the 18 hours, where technology is integrated into everything that the teachers are working on. I wanted to thank you for your time, and if there were any questions.
Thank you for the update, and you know, I'm amazed at how much has happened over kind of short period of time. Although I guess technology moves pretty quickly, so as we you talk a little bit about access versus capacity for the middle schools as we roll out. Obviously, in the next couple of years, everybody's going to have a tablet. So right now, do we have the capacity in the middle schools, if everybody was on a tablet at once, hypothetically, do we have the capacity to absorb that, essentially?
So our target for this year is to keep up with the implementations that we're doing. So currently we have the base system that will pick up the wireless, but not 100%. But we did install, as I showed in that slide, the cabling is completed in every classroom and the access point. It's getting the switches now to complete that, so we have the ports to light those up. Once that is, yes, the answer to that question is 100%, we will have enough.
And it's in line with us getting the Chromebooks into the hands of the middle school students, and hopefully the ports will be in by then.
Yes.
Because you can have the devices, but if you can't really use them, then.
Yes, and we will be ready for the 5th and 6th graders, and we will be ready next year for the 7th and 8th graders.
Thank you.
Guy, great job. Just one of the things from the convention, we had lunch and we were talking with a security vendor, and we're putting in a bunch of security cameras and other systems in, and those also will eat up bandwidth on the pipe. So putting in all that cabling and all those switches becomes necessary, not just for the classrooms themselves, but the actual infrastructure. You know, we have the IP telephones, we're going to have IP-based security. So it seems like the most boring slide that was up there, but actually it's the golden slide that makes everything happen. So thank you, Guy, on that. I know we did that tech audit, and I know you've embraced what they came up with. And it's going to take some time because we can't plug everything in until those switches are in place, but we're getting the right stuff, and I think we have a great roadmap. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, just a couple things. One, a shout-out to Guy. Just this past week, we had about 10 teachers and administrators attend a tech conference, and there have a whole bunch of vendors at different booths and everything. And you kind of walk up, and people try to sell you things. But so I said, oh, you're from Plainville, Bethpage, Guy Ladico. And they said, he's very good at getting the best price.
We appreciate that.
So he was very complimentary of your work, though. I think, again, the partnership with having Ben Wiley be Guy's other half, I guess, in this initiative and being able to support one another. And, you know, it's great to have all this equipment, but to be able to, have support for teachers to put it in their hands. One thing that I would ask that the board consider when it comes to budget season, and we're going to talk about that soon. Guy, if you can go to the three-year goals there. We talk about in 15-16 the one-to-one initiative and getting those carts in the hands of those 7th and 8th graders, and again, the natural progression would be obviously to move them up and get those kids the one-to-one. But I want to talk about possibly considering the high school the following year and perhaps doing something like an 8-9. You know, our high school teachers are a little bit chomping at the bit there, and to wait another 2 years before we start that to look at our 9th graders. So again, I don't know if the funding is there and again, the capacity to be able to do that. I know there's more that comes with just handing someone a device, but I think it's important that we keep our eye on that.
One of the things that got spoken about at the conference was the adaptive tests that are supposedly coming. And a couple of years ago, we'd had a discussion about this and decided that we didn't need to be putting our money into PARC. So I'm just wondering what would happen if do we have the capacity for that, or yeah, if it happened tomorrow.
Everything that we have in place, it would depend on how the testing schedules were set up in the buildings. So if we could do it tomorrow by setting up the schedules by staggering which the NYSED will let us do. And on that note, everything that we are purchasing is PARC compatible. So that's an important fact that we're taking into consideration. And Gary, on the on the switches, they're all PoE, power over Ethernet, to power those, continue powering the wireless access points in the phones. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Next coming up is the summer school report. And I'm going to be right back, Tom. I just got it.
Welcome, everyone. Hi. Before I get started, I was thinking about the process that this took to get this program from the high school down to Matlin Middle School. And I was kind of reflecting on everything and how many people it took in order to get this process done. So I just wanted to quickly thank Chris Donnarumo, who was really integral in getting this program up and running for me. He allowed for a great transition. Vince Molieri, who worked with BOCES, Jill, who was involved with some stuff, some bumps in the roads over the summer,
Dr. Lewis, who helped me get air conditioners, Andy Ward, Guy Ladico, who set up our technology, and all the teachers that had to move everything down along with books and everything else. It really was a much bigger undertaking than I think I first realized, but just a wonderful learning experience. So with that said, tonight I'm going to go over, first I'll go over a class report, then scholastic results, which are the results of how students did within our classes, and then I'll go over the Regents' results on how they did on the August Regents. So this is the class size report, and what's important to notice when looking at this right off the bat is where we had opportunities to combine classes, we did. The English 9 and English 10 on the left-hand side was an opportunity for us to combine that class, so that was one class, as well as the English 11 and 12. And just in terms of trying to understand the report and how the numbers make sense, if you look at English 9 and you look all the way to the right, we had one student from Bethpage and we had one student from POB totaling a number of 2. In the second row, you'll see there were 0 from Bethpage and 5 students from POB. This is a continuation of the class size report. In this situation, we did just the opposite. We had an algebra class and we thought it was a wise decision to actually split this class into 2 sections and give students a more individualized program, and so we did. One of these classes was also an ICT class, which allowed us to have an additional teacher in the room. The total number of students is 110, and Bethpage had 36 students that attended this program. The next slide is the scholastic results. And these are the, when you look at this particular slide, it's important to note we had a lot of positives. We've had a lot of success. The one failure was actually an ENL student who recently arrived to America, and he was part of our English 10 class and really wanted to acclimate to the English language. And he was our one student that didn't pass. On this next slide, we had just the opposite. We had a student who, not a student, we had a challenging situation with our algebra, where in this particular class, we had students that were really having a difficult time handling the curriculum. The main cohort of the students that failed was a special ed group who had difficulty from the beginning, and that the teacher warned us about, and we did everything we could to try to move those students along. And in further slides, I'll talk a little bit more about some ideas that I have to try to improve that for the following summer. These are the August Regents exams results. And when you're looking at this particular slide, it's important to look. The thing that I think stands out right away are the Algebra 2 trig numbers. Before summer school started, we had received an email from BOCES saying, please be aware that you're going to get a lot of students statewide that are going to be taking this Algebra 2 trig because many students had failed it, and please be mindful of the amount of exams that were ordered. I was actually pretty proud of our results. We had about 66% of the students actually come in, take the exam, and pass it, which I thought was pretty good. Common Core Algebra, as you see below, was that same group. If you look to the right, you have 6 students that enrolled in the course, 1 student that was a walk-in. None of those kids, unfortunately, passed that Regents. However, we did have some students that were regular ed that did move along and pass. Again, this is one more slide that has our Regents results. What's interesting about this slide, something that stands out to me, is our chemistry students. We had 12 walk-ins. Out of the 12 that passed, many of those students were part of our Regents review class that we held in the school for a couple of hours each day over the course of a week, and I really think it benefited those students as well as the students in our Earth Science. We didn't offer Earth Science this summer, but we did have a review course, and several of the students in that review course did take the exam and did pass. What's also interesting is that if you look at the Earth Science and you take a look at these numbers right here, 7 special education students actually came in who were also part of our review and also passed the core, also passed the regents, which is pretty exciting. Overall, these were our numbers. 75 students passed that were regular ed, 40 had failed, 22 passed that were special ed, 28 had failed. I think what I'm most proud of and most proud of the teachers about is we had 11 12th grade students that needed coursework in order to graduate, and by having this program, all of them had passed. Some of the students needed science, some of them needed more than one subject area. But that was pretty exciting to see those kids move on. 66% again, 66% of the students taking the Algebra 2 Regents also passed. And then finally, one of the ideas that I've been toying around with is thinking about an AIS initiative. And this really happened after the summer school program ended. I know my time as the principal kind of concluded, but I still felt very much responsible for those kids that didn't move on. And this summer was really a great opportunity for me, and it really energized me. And I kept thinking about different ways that I could restructure the program. And these are conversations that I'm hoping to have with Jill about possibly implementing an AIS program where students have an opportunity to learn a little bit more before they go into a lesson so that they're better prepared. And then in turn, hopefully we get a little more bang for our buck at the end. But I just wanted to thank everyone here for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it. It was a great summer. So do you guys have any questions for me? Yep.
Number one, from a disciplinary point of view, how did things go this summer?
That's a great question. You know, summer school is, it's weird. I'm going to speak a little bit about that. Having worked in the area that I worked in to start my career in East Harlem for 5 years, and then coming out to this great district, I have very little challenges with discipline. But this summer, you're really working with a group of kids, in my mind, that are at risk or learning disabled. And on some levels, it was kind of troubling to observe it every day. I felt just not great about what I was seeing. In terms of discipline specifically, we had some students that did mess around. I had a suspension this summer. But we were able to get those students through, which is the ultimate goal. But we had some stuff, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm not going to elaborate.
Okay, I wasn't asking for specifics. The other thing I was wondering about, and this is a curriculum issue, I guess, in terms of, you know, the 0% success rate on the algebra, this was their algebra, the first, correct?
Yes.
For the special needs students, does this relate to the nature of the test, do you think, or the population of students, were they, you know, neater than average, or?
I definitely think it's a combination of both. I had remembered the first weekend, the teacher came to me and said, I'm very concerned about three or four of the kids that are coming in. A couple of the students were from Bethpage, and he really felt like he was going to have a struggle getting these kids through. So they worked very diligently in that classroom. I was visiting the classroom often. So I think it's a combination of both. I think to a certain extent it was over their head. But I have high expectations for students, and that's why I thought perhaps doing something like an AIS would help kind of push these kids through. These kids failed in the course by an average of about 7 points, but the Regents, it was a bit more. But I think I do think it's a combination. Yeah. Anyone else?
Great job. Thank
you. All right. Thank you.
Next, we have class size report.
Vince, while you're getting that ready, I do want to thank Tom. He spent a lot of time here preparing for the summer school and also handling some, you know, reconfiguration of staff and where the location had to be. And one thing that I want to note is that coming in every morning, Tom was outside with the kids. And it really shows that he's not there just to manage the program, but he really did connect with the students. And Tom, I would be happy to follow up with you to talk about those discussions. And I so appreciate that you really are here for the kids. And it's not about just getting them to pass, but to support them socially and emotionally, too. Thank you.
Okay. Well, welcome. This is our first class size report of the school year. This data is based on Beds Day. And as most of you know, Beds Day is our date of point for enrollment. So without further ado, our actual enrollment from last year was 4,929 students. You can see the breakdown K through 12. We projected 4,882 for this coming school year as we work through the budget with those running the K-12 breakdowns. We are at 4,880 as of Beds Day, which is the first Wednesday of October. So we were close on our overall projection, but the way it broke out was a little bit different. Our elementary numbers, K-4, are a little lower, where our secondary numbers, particularly in the middle schools, are a little bit higher. When you look at it by building on the secondary level, you can see the number of sections being offered to our students by the high school and going through POB Middle and then Matlin Middle School. We have it broken down by class size, so 1 to 10 students in each class is represented, how many number of sections, 11 to 15 the number of sections, and so forth down the road. You'll see the majority of our sections fall between 16 and 24. Then the 25 to 27 is a little bit higher than we did last year, but not much higher. And then you see the other sections as we go forward. At the high school, the 54 number on the 28 to 30 is a little bit higher also than in previous years. At the elementary level, there's consistency across the board. We added, if you remember, after the budget vote, we added another section at Stratford Road in fourth grade to bring our averages in line with our other schools. These are the average class sizes in each of the buildings, K through 4, and the number of sections that are being run in the general, the overall population in each building. There is equity across the board in each of the sections for the most part, so it looks pretty good. Our overall enrollment by building is listed on the left-hand column, the average class size in the middle, and then our full-time teaching equivalents for each of the building is listed on the right-hand side. On the bottom, what you can't see for is a total number of staff of 496.15 on the FTE count, full-time teaching equivalents, with a total enrollment of 4,880 students. And that would be the class size and enrollment as of Beds Day 2015. Questions?
Okay, so while we're talking about class size, I did want to bring to your attention that one of the things that we do monitor is the enrollment of new language students, English as a new language. And this summer, we had a number of students both move in and move out. But for the most part, I think overall we have 20 new students in the district. And one of the things that when we start to talk about budget season, we'll talk about the ENL population and then the new changes in the Part 154 regulations. But, you know, that makes an impact on classes and the need. And, you know, Tom spoke about one of the students trying to stretch themselves this summer and pass one of those courses. But, you know, while we're talking about that, I think it's important to note those new students within our population, K-12. So along the lines of looking at class sizes and sections and things, we've had a look at some breakage positions. And as I just spoke a little bit about ENL, we actually had to hire a 0.1 teacher to talk about breakage and to address the needs of those kids. So a 0.1 was added to ENL. We are also looking to add some math staff to address a couple of needs. Tom, you know, spoke about some of the special needs students, and we had some students who passed the Regents but didn't pass the course. And it's a small population of children. However, it's important that, you know, we try to address their needs and have them graduate on time and with the coursework needed. So we've been actually looking for a math teacher to accommodate those needs. Currently, we've had one of our own teachers teaching an additional class to help support that in the interim. With the needs of the high school, we've been waiting to hear about some of those students who either level up or level down, both in any subject. The period is not over to do that. The time that the students cannot no longer carry the grade across ends at the end of the quarter, which is November 13th. So we had been anticipating some additional staffing needed for math and may in fact need some staff. Right now we're looking at perhaps one other section to add another statistics class or perhaps team teach a class. We only have one current period of statistics, one section of statistics, college statistics. Well, and at that point, we have a couple more students who would benefit from that. So we would look to partner with the PCT with regard to that and perhaps give the students what they need. So I will be forthcoming with more information about that once a couple of things can be looked at, and I hope within the next day or so. In addition, I would be making a recommendation. Currently, Mr. Bowen, our math chairperson, is teaching a 0.2 math AIS class at Matlin Middle School. And with the needs of the district and the amount of changes with regard to mathematics and our attention on math K-12, my recommendation would be that we relieve him of that responsibility this year and hire a 0.2 for that position. So at this time, we have been struggling to find staff, and I'll be very honest, it has been a challenge. We've looked at a number of people who we've been ready to bring to you, and they don't have certification, or some paperwork fell through, or they declined the position. We hope at 7 o'clock tonight, we have a person to bring to you while we were meeting with you. So we received a phone call that perhaps somebody can take on a position, but we need to verify some things as they have another assignment somewhere else. But ultimately, right now, my recommendation is a 0.6 in breakage in math. Again, you know, I would wait up. I want you to be aware that the high school may come to us with some additional recommendations.
And that 0.6, I believe we're going to be voting on later. Is that in routine business, or does it have to be walked on? We don't have people yet, right?
So we don't have any bodies, so I don't have an appointment to give you. And typically, you don't vote on breakage. You've already given us the authority for the three positions. So, again, I just wanted to more publicly share that the positions have been used to this point.
Perfect. Any questions on class sizes? I just have one observation, which is we can't do anything about it, but I'd be very curious to see what the kindergarten group's going to look like next year after only being under 300 for the first time that anyone can ever remember. And I'm wondering, is that a downward spike or is it a real serious trend? So I'd be interested when you start having a feel for where those numbers are, if you could give us a little heads up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're good. What do we have next? School tax bill. We're going to do school tax bill, then we'll do field desk.
Okay, yeah, so we're going to ask Rich Cunningham to talk about the school tax bill, and this was, we just kind of created a PowerPoint just to better bring a better picture to this. It's a little difficult to understand.
Okay, I'm happy to be here tonight to speak to you about everybody's favorite topic, taxes.
So property tax bills started arriving at homes last Monday. That's when the phone calls started coming in, and people started asking, what happened? And in a short presentation, I'll try to explain a very complex topic. But there are a number of things at play here with tax bills. One thing was for the whole community, Plainview Old Bethpage community, and this has been a trend for many years, total taxable assessed value has been going down. So property values on average have been decreasing. They continued that trend. Coming into this tax year, the tax rolls showed that the rate that the assessed valuations are decreasing are greater than average in Class 3, and Class 4 and Class 1 are decreasing at a lower rate. So what that means is that some of the burden is going on to Class 4, which is commercial, but even more so, a greater burden is going on to Class 1, which are all the homeowners in Plainview Old Bethpage, because their rate of decline is less than the total average. You'll note that Class 3, which is utilities, saw a very large decrease in total assessed values. Utilities are the Water District, LIPA, Keyspan. They all pay some taxes. They grieve their taxes just like everybody else, and they're very successful. I'll speak a little bit more to that on another slide. Annually, Nassau County Legislature has to approve what are called the adjusted base proportions, or simply put, if you imagine that there are four pieces of the tax pie, Class 1, which are residences under three stories, Class 2, three stories tall or taller. We don't have any of those in Plainview. Class 3, utilities, and Class 4, all other commercial properties, whether it's a warehouse, a Dunkin' Donuts, or Walbaum's, or a card store, they are reallocated every year, and they are approved by the Nassau County Legislature. So this year, the Nassau County Legislature approved an increase in the Class 1 base proportion that drove that portion of the tax pie to grow by 2.24% over the previous year. So the largest portion of the tax pie grew by another 2.24%. There's some mystery on how this is figured out, and we're not really too sure, and I've been looking at this for a long time, so have been a lot of other people. Nobody really knows if the Nassau County Legislature truly understands what they're voting on, but they do it every year. So this year, you'll see there is a large drive to move the property taxes towards Class 1. Note the very large decrease in Class 3 utilities. Their share of the tax pie decreased by 43.73%. Now, here's the real thing to look at. If you recall, the school board adopted a property tax levy for the 15-16 fiscal year that was 0.22% above the previous year. When all was said and done, our property tax levy actually decreased by 1.59%. And that will be a topic for another presentation because it gives you a whole other set of things to consider. But what got enacted was something from the 2013 LIPA Reform Act, where LIPA was not going to pay greater than an increase in 2% on their property taxes. Somehow that filtered into Plainview Old Bethpage with an overall decrease. You can see their decrease in property taxes, Class 3, went down $2 million. Okay, so our overall property tax levy decreased by actually $1.9 million. That's going to come to us, that difference between what you approved and what is actually coming to us in the form of taxes is going to come to us in the form of a payment in lieu of taxes. And that's where things get really wacky, because we weren't expecting that $1.9 million pilot, and that is, unless there's legislation, is going to affect our tax cap calculation in an adverse way. And that's the same in every Nassau County school district, and right now a bunch of very intelligent people are trying to figure out what to advise their boards on and what to lobby for and advocate for. We don't have a recommendation yet, because we're still trying to understand it. So, in summary, total district tax levy decreased by over $1.9 million. Decisions made by the county Department of Assessment and the county legislature increased the tax burden to homeowners. So if a property's taxable assessed value remained absolutely the same between the two tax years, your property tax bills increased by 4.71%, even though the tax levy went down by 1.59%. Do you have any questions?
Can you go back three slides?
One more. No, forward. I went too many. Okay, the 2.24%.
Mm-hmm.
That basically means, correct me if I'm wrong, had we had a 0% budget and your house remained the same exact value, you still would have gone up 2.24%, or is that number even higher?
No, if our tax levy didn't change.
Right, it's zero.
And all assessed values remain the same. Everything else remained the same, then your taxes would have went up 2.24%.
And this is by people running for re-election telling you that they haven't raised your taxes in 5 or 10 years.
Yes.
Rich, can I just ask, I know we're going to put this up on the website, mm-hmm. And the board reports, but on the... And I didn't look at this before, but in terms of the classes, 1, 2, 3, and 4, can we say what they are? 1's homeowners, 3's utilities?
Sure.
So
before
that
we
can
put it in the beginning, like kind of a definition slide in the beginning
right,
of the,
so they
sure,
can better
I'll
understand
develop that
what
slide
those...
and get it in there tomorrow. Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
Good suggestion.
Great job.
Thank you.
I attended a political debate at Plainview Jewish Center, and one of the candidates, it was John Vendito, and he was very honest. He said he talked about the taxes that the town of Oyster Bay taxes its citizens, and all the rest of the burden falls on the school district because we are the real drivers of the taxes if we look at it.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at this and I look at whatever deal was made with LIPA to see whatever kind of breaks they get, and then they have the audacity to turn around and raise our rates because they turn around and say there's not enough money. If Newsday wanted to do a real story, this is the story. The story is not the school districts. We did everything we could to keep the tax levy down. We stayed under the cap. We went and planned for years for this period of time. We've had our reserves. We've done what's right. And then you get a whammy in here. That's just unconscionable. And I think that that's what our taxpayers have to know, because when they call in, they're going to call and yell at the school board for the school board's budget and how we lied to the people. And yet we look at this. We did everything right. We were transparent. And you look at LIPA getting a break like this, and then they're going to raise our rates claiming the price of gas went down, people weren't using the amount of oil, so because you don't use so much oil, we have to raise our prices to make good for whatever. It's just a bunch of crap. And I really think that we have to do something and let people, and I watch my language, it's just that we have to let people know, because we keep getting blamed. Right on tax bills, it tells you to call your school district.
Mm-hmm.
Everything falls on us. But we have the only budget that people can vote on, and that's what's really wrong when we talk about being honest and taxing people and everything else. No one can go and fight for the town of Oyster Bay or Nassau County or a state budget. We swallow what we have to do, but when something is done like this to our taxpayers, then I think we have an obligation to let people know it's really a very big injustice to everybody, especially school districts.
So I don't mean to say this to wind you up even more, but it probably will. When somebody says that most of your school property, most of your property tax bill goes to schools, they also fail to mention that school districts don't collect sales tax. In the town of Oyster Bay and Nassau County and every other municipality, other than water districts, does, and fire districts. They don't collect sales tax either. But more than half of their revenue is coming from sales tax, and we all pay sales tax, but they don't talk about that. If sales tax was lower, it'd be a lot more affordable to live here. just as if we paid less in property taxes. So that's important to note, that we don't collect any sales tax, and our municipalities do. It's a very large source of revenue. Newsday also did try to write about this. It's so complicated in that article that they wrote about 3 weeks ago. They got it very wrong. They noted that LIPA is no longer paying sales tax. That wasn't actually recent. They shouldn't have been paying sales tax to Nassau County for about 25 years due to another Reform Act. They didn't quite realize it, so they just kept on paying. But now LIPA isn't going to pay sales tax, and their property tax growth isn't going to be as big, and they're asking for a rate increase. So, yes, it's infuriating. So we will have to give you a recommendation at the board level about what we should be lobbying for and asking NISBA to investigate regarding a possible recalculation of our tax levy cap going back to this past February, because we weren't expecting this big pilot, and pilots are a deduct on our school tax levy. And also our levy went down. So now whatever tiny multiplier that we have on our tax levy because of low CPI is going to be multiplying an even smaller number. So there's going to be an increased limit on our taxing power, unless there's some adjustment based on this decision that really Nassau County didn't understand either, which is why the tax bills came out later than usual.
Thank you.
And this brings us to a favorite topic, field testing. Ms. Girash, a little background?
Sure. So every about this time every year, the building principals receive a request to file for how many exams they need for 3-8 testing. In this exam schedule, they basically have received guidance or a request for the field test. Would they be willing to participate in a pilot of doing the online assessment, which is alleged to be forthcoming with regard to New York State exams, should they continue on this path? So if you recall, when we talked about field testing last year, the board had asked that we return the exams. That is not necessarily permissible, but we returned the exams, and there was no penalty as a result. Correct, under the board's direction. But so again, I wanted to bring to your attention that this is part of the communication sent to districts. In addition, there were letters from New York State Education Department explaining the rollout of field testing and the need for people to pilot field testing. So for this school year, there's an option to check off on this form. Would you be willing to pilot field testing in your grade, in some of your grades or and/or classes? And if so, how many students would that be? Next year, they're asking districts to pilot the actual exam, taking the exam online, and then in the 17-18 school year to actually take the exams online. With that said, if they are going in that direction, I can understand why they would want some people to field test, you know, the ability to be able to do that and manage it with the wireless within a field test rather than in a regular exam. However, the point of it is, I know that this was an issue, so I brought it to, I want to bring it to your attention.
No. you know, we've had this discussion before. You know, this, I've been in marketing for 23 years. I have never worked for a company that got free market research like this. Companies pay for feedback during product development. They pay by, you know, giving people $50 to come in and sit and test the product out. They pay for focus groups and surveys and things like that. I don't understand why these companies are allowed to get away with it, even worse, get away with it using children and at the expense of much-needed instructional time. So, you know, no.
you know, for the last 2 years, we've had discussions about field testing, and in each of those 2 years, I I voted to return the field test back. You know, the first year it was a simple majority that we had, and the second year, I think last year, was a unanimous vote of this board to return the field test back. And the reasons to do that, which I don't want to belabor it at 10 to 10 at this point, you know, that haven't changed for me. No new facts or circumstance, in my view, or argument could be made about why we should continue to do field testing. So the only thing I am concerned about, however, is if in fact the way that it's going to go is it's going to be mandated to do online, you know, to do it on computers, is how, if it's going to happen, how are we going to give, you know, do we have an obligation to give those that want to have the experience of using it, you know, a practice test, if you will, of how, you know, get the feedback for us to provide, hey, why we don't want online. I don't know if there's a vehicle to say make it opt-in instead of an opt-out, but I almost feel like maybe it's something that we could explore if people want to opt-in and make that available to. Now, I know it's a state-level type thing. I'm against the field testing. But I think it would be useful to give students, if that's where we're going, to give students the ability to have experience. I mean, I remember taking the bar exam, and one of the best things that could happen was the practice exam, going to this big Javits Center and having thousands of people sit there and going and, you know, and mimicking the real example, you know, the real world way of, way, you know, what it was going to be like several months later. And that's the only concern that I have. My view of field testing hasn't changed. And maybe there's a different way that in our district that we could do that and explore it, not using field tests. I don't know. But if it's going to go that way in a couple of years, why not allow those interested to expose themselves to it that feel like they want to get adjusted to it? That's the only thought I had.
I fully support our decision last year to opt out of the field test. I think I was one of the people who changed over to the other side from where I was. I've also been very vocal that I have no faith in the state to be able to administer a computerized field test to thousands or millions of children at the same time. However, you're not going to ever know what really is involved in it if you never participate in it at all. And this is where I have my own personal challenge with this whole thing, and where I like your concept of a opt-in if it was particular students or particular building or particular teachers, only because there's a very good chance that we're going to get stuck with computerized testing, whether we like it or not. And I would like to know that our district has the ability to handle it, and that our teachers do, and our students do, and our infrastructure does. And, you know, Guy did a great presentation. I don't think it's going to be, we're going to be the part that falls short. But by the same regards, we opened up the portal last year for parents to see what teachers they got and crashed the system for 4 or 5 hours. So I just feel that technology needs to be tested before it's implemented. It's called beta testing in my world, and you do that. In my world, you don't pay beta testers. They volunteer. And you take the ones who come in, and they test your product, and that's what happens. And I would like to investigate if there's an ability to do just what Seth said, and opt in. Maybe it's one class or two, or maybe it's a building offers some kids a chance to do it, and maybe no one will want to do it. But I'm just interested. I don't want to be on the outside looking in when this thing comes down the pike in a couple of years, and it's going to come down the pike.
Yeah, and maybe there's an alternative. Maybe it's not through, you know, field testing of the statewide standardized test. Maybe there's a way to mimic what it would look like through some internal opt-in that you don't have to engage.
Well,
the
that's
state,
you know,
with
when you say the beta testers, they don't get paid, but they volunteer. The kids sitting in the classroom aren't volunteering. If we as a district decide that we're going to do this, those children have no choice. And I want to make sure the onus is not on the parents, because some parents don't know this is going on, wouldn't condone it if they knew.
I mean, that's the idea of the opt-in as opposed to an opt-out.
I know, but we need to make it clear to parents this is going to be given. Do you want your child taking this? I don't want this to be like, oh, we're not going to say anything, and unless the parents send us a letter, the kids are getting the field test.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
You're out.
Yes.
Just from a practical point of view, and this was, yeah, I was also somebody who changed my vote because of you know, the nature of who was doing the testing. But, you know, my understanding of field testing is, you know, the idea is you're getting a large sample so you can kind of see how students are scoring on it. So I'm just wondering from a practical point of view whether that would be even something. I mean, I can think of a lot of things that could be done to give students that experience, develop our own kind of in-house thing, have sample tests on, you know, experiences online that families can explore the same way, you know, we used to be able to get a look at old tests so students could see what they were like. I mean, I could see those as alternatives. I'm just wondering from a practical point of view, you know, whether, you know, they would let us basically opt in for field tests since the purpose of it is really to help them standardize the test. But anyway, just thinking out loud.
I'm not in favor of the field tests, but I am in favor of what Emily just said. Is there something that we can do down the road to give some kind of maybe meaningful test to us, but that it would just be our own test and not the state field test?
I'm just going to echo what Debbie just said. I really don't want field tests, but if we could somehow figure out our own way of doing it, I could see it. And I think that we would get our own understanding of our needs. We'd also see how our own system works, if it could hold it, if it can't hold it, and whatever else. But I just, the field tests.
We could do the whole district in second, third, and fourth grade if that's what we decided to do, and we could see if our system.
And our children with special needs to see whatever help they
but
would
I'm
need.
Saying using meaningful data to us.
It's a discussion we have to have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you have the poll, but it seems like all of are fairly consistent with our view that we don't want to participate in field testing like we did last year. But we want to at least explore, and we don't have to make that decision today, other options of trying to figure out if our infrastructure is capable of doing it, and for those students that want to have the experience of testing it on, you know, using computers, to have that experience available to them. And
yeah.
If right, that could happen at the other end, but we would. It would make sense to make sure that at least at our end, we would know there was.
Just going to say that piece of it. I mean, one thing that I'm just curious. I mean, they are asking us to field test this year, and obviously, as a representative from the school district, we're not allowed to take that position. But since they're piercing questions this year, and they're not going to be in the future, mm-hmm. I think they're asking us really. For the field testing to see the system on their end and on our end to see if that works. Otherwise, I can't see the point of those type.
But unless,
you know,
they're going to change, like in the past, the field testing, it wasn't like the state test where the tests were given on an actual date, an actual time, and everyone field test. Everybody has a window, so. You know, exactly. You're not really going to see the kind of pressure on the system that you're going to have the day when every child in the state is taking that test at 9:30 a.m.
Oh, so. But the field testing, the way it's been explained to us, mm-hmm. is that, in fact, you will set up a system so that yeah. not every kid is going to be on a tablet or a device. They would be rotated. Not every district obviously has a computer or one-to-one device for every child 3 through 8 to be taking the test at the same time like we do now. Most kids take it in the morning. So I don't believe that's going to be the direction from the state, that every child will be on a device at the same moment in time. So it's, again, I think they're looking at more adaptive.
And I'd also like to say that if this is the way we're going in education, I think there's value in sort of like what Seth said in terms of the LSATs of having kids take computerized tests.
Practice tests.
So that they understand how that works. I'm just not feeling it for the field tests.
And this year from Pierce.
Yeah.
Similar to what Debbie was just saying, I my background is with, you know, sort of secondary school standardized tests, but and you know, those are kids actually have to pay to sit for the SAT and you know provide the field tested questions. So I mean, this is something that's an established part of how you do educational testing on a large basis. But you know, again, given the fact that they're Pearson questions, yeah.
Of course they are.
But just to summarize on this question, as far as the field tests go, the computerized field tests, we are choosing to not participate in the coming year. Is that correct?
Yeah, thanks.
Good summary?
And I want.
Last year we said any regents we would still participate in field tests for regents. Are we still in the same place as that was from last year?
Could you just tell us what the value of doing that is?
Do I want to ask Jim?
Jim, we...
Mr. Murray?
Yeah.
They do participate in them. Well, they are teachable moments.
So we're saying no to the computerized 3-8 for this year, but we will continue to participate in high school, secondary regents level field testing.
Okay. You said no on computerized field testing 3-8.
No on 3-8.
Thank you.
Public participation. Okay, District Policy 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, or those of others could be in some way violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. We ask that everyone in the audience please be quiet and listen and let us hear the questions from the people and be respectful to everyone. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Michelle Lorge. I live in Plainview. My daughter, Rena, is a third-grade student at Pasadena. I'm here tonight to share my daughter's experience so far with the Common Core math curriculum. Like all other third-grade students, Rena started learning math only through the Common Core curriculum, so she was not influenced by any other learning method. I'm here to voice my opinion about the Common Core math and provide some suggestions on how to facilitate their learning of the math in a more conducive way. My daughter Rena started out the year with learning rounding, asking them to round 2-digit and 3-digit numbers to the nearest 10 or 100. Rena found this to be very confusing and became frustrated while doing the math homework. Each evening, it would often end in a yelling, crying fit. I tried to help her complete it. My husband tried with her. Our 16-year-old neighbor tried to explain it to her and her math tutor. She was beyond frustrated to the point of saying, "Mommy, I'm not going to pass third grade," and said the math is too hard for her. Everyone who knows Rena knows she's a happy, smiley kid, and I swear at every parent-teacher conference since nursery, the teachers mention she's always smiling and they love her giggly laugh. Rena has struggled with math since second grade and is fortunate to receive AIS 2 times per week. She has also attended math extra help Thursday mornings at Pasadena. She also has a private tutor once a week. So my husband and I and the school district are trying to provide her with the help she needs. The math has been a little bit easier for her the past few weeks while studying Unit 3, which uses place value to add and subtract. After speaking with some friends from other districts, they did not start with the rounding topic. I'm not sure why POB starts this way. Rounding is a very complex topic in itself, and the very next day it jumped to estimating the sums of 2- and 3-digit numbers. Perhaps start with basic addition, which is in the beginning of Unit 2, instead of rounding, which is in the later part of Unit 2. My daughter lost her confidence by starting off the year with this topic, like a rug was pulled out from under her. And from speaking with other parents, their kids became worried and fearful of the third grade math ahead. I'm not alone in feeling that Pearson's Envisions program explains simple math concepts in extremely complicated ways, There are numerous parents in our district who are elementary school teachers who teach in neighboring districts. I've learned their districts use several different math programs and teacher-created materials as tools. For example, when teaching simple subtraction, Envisions uses the subtraction with an expanded algorithm, very well known, method whereby the kids are taught to break it down into a bunch of unnecessary steps instead of simpler subtraction. I understand that Envisions is training them to deepen their understanding of problem solving, but not every kid learns through this convoluted, complex way. Like, similar to echo what the gentleman said before, I forgot his name, but every kid learns in a different way. I quote my neighbor when he shared his thoughts on one of his son's homework problems using Pearson's subtraction with an expanded algorithm method. He said, quote, "This needlessly complicated exercise is comparable to telling me I should walk around the block in order to get to my next door neighbor's house in order to learn the terrain." Most of the 7-8-year-olds are not developmentally ready to think this way. The third grade elementary teachers should use other teaching tools from which to choose. My teacher friends from other districts have stated when they come across a lesson from Envisions that they find is not effective, they skip the book and teach it in a simpler way. Teachers should be able to modify when necessary and not forced to teach only the Envisions way. I urge the board to seek out other math programs and not solely use Envisions as their primary tool, because that's basically what I've seen the whole time since she's been in school. It's not about a program, it's about providing developmentally appropriate experiences that will help our children master concepts. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Beth Nispel, and I reside at 27 Phipps Lane in Plainview. I just wanted to actually speak to something that came up earlier. I'm very happy that you decided to vote against the field testing, because I was very concerned with some of the comments that were going on. As someone who's in the trenches with the kids, it shouldn't be that we are making sure the technology works while these kids suffer, and I do say the word suffer as someone sees what's happening with the tests. So if it's an issue of the technology working, that has to be a separate issue from these children sitting through additional tests. So I'm very pleased to see that you voted against that. The last meeting, I came and I shared a similar story to Michelle. Today, I just wanted to come and ask some questions of the assistant superintendent of instruction and the Board of Education to see what you're doing with some of these issues that we're starting to see now become a very hot issue for elementary and particularly third grade students. So my first question is, what is the district's stance on the CPA approach, and how is the district implementing this in the elementary classrooms? My second question is, what is the long-term plan for coaches in the elementary schools? How are you planning to build teachers' content knowledge around the standards? Plainview does not have as many elementary coaches as in other districts. My neighboring district has one elementary math coach and one elementary ELA coach per building. And I know that the numbers here in Plainview are, I think, one for the entire district, not one per building. So, and they are the ones who are responsible to really help the teachers build that content knowledge. My next question is, how are the teachers formatively assessing as they teach different concepts? Because I haven't seen any formative types of assessments at all. I'm also curious as to how the different assessments that are being given are used to drive instruction, because what I've seen happen is the kids come home with the unit test. The first test at Stratford Road was accompanied by a letter stating that the students did not do well, and rather than going and practicing some more, they moved on to the next topic. Every day it's a new topic, new homework. Next day, new topic, new homework. So how are we actually using the assessments that the kids are taking to drive instruction and move kids forward? My next question is, what assessments besides the Envisions unit tests and standardized tests are being used in POB? I haven't seen any other assessments come home except the ones that come straight from the Envisions book, which Envisions in itself is a questionable program, and I don't think any district should be relying on one tool. So I'm wondering if you are working as a district on compiling some new assessments across the elementary buildings, and as I said before, and how you're going to use those to actually move the instruction and increase the success. And my last question is, what are the components of your math workshop here in Plainview? Do you include concept development, problem solving, routines, and daily math? How often is concept development taking place? Because I see it taking place every day, and I don't think that's necessarily the intent of concept development. Some of the topics, some of the discussion also on social media has been about routines and fluency. That's something that should be part of the workshop every day, and that's also something that I think needs to be taken a look at. So I bring these questions to you, and I hope that I will in some way get a response to see what we're doing here in Plainview. Thank you very much, and I would just like to wish the board congratulations on your recognition week. I truly do appreciate that you volunteered your time, and I know that it's probably not always a pleasant experience, but I really do thank you because I know you're here for all the kids. So thank you.
Ms. Nisbell, somebody will get back to you with your responses.
Hi, Diane Collins, Carnation Drive in Farmingdale. First, I have to apologize to the board for having emailed over the weekend and disturbed your weekend. I apologize, but I explained in the email that I thought it was a time-sensitive issue. The issue that I'm addressing the board about is the non-AP and non-college math courses that are not available to 12th grade students. I had a specific student that was mentioned in the email, went through the scenario as to how he arrived at his situation, but there are many students that were in similar situations in the sense where they had nowhere else to go when they were stuck in a math class that was not the appropriate class for them, for whatever reason, their own personal reasons. There was a misunderstanding with the supercalculus. Those students took that class believing it was under an AP as far as rigor, found out it is actually harder than the AP, and therefore they are now in a class that's not really the best suited for them. The students that exited that class early filled up the college statistics class, the only class that really would be something that would be less rigorous for them. So there's nothing left for the rest of the students that are stuck in either their even calculus AP and AB and BC. If their kids are in the wrong class, there's nowhere for them to go. So my request was, and I was told, that there would be some resolution tonight, and so I'm looking to find out if there is a resolution and what it is.
One of the things that we spoke about earlier, just when we were talking about the break-ins positions, was that we were looking at the situation of the fuller class sizes. And as I said, we were partnering with the union to try to make an accommodation. What I also said was we've been struggling to get some staff in place for at least a month in some situations to make those accommodations. In addition, all of the requests for the students you say are out there, we don't have those requests. So what you may be saying you heard, or we haven't actually gotten those. Yes, you're accurate in the fact that some students did level down and we've been able to make that accommodation. There are some sections within the math department, like our college statistics class, where we're only running one section. So it's difficult, especially at those upper levels, when you have, not an alternative for the students. So I recognize your concerns. But I don't have a specific answer to give to you tonight, but I will have somebody get back to you.
Okay, can I continue? Am I able to address some of the... As far as the breakage and the teacher, lack of teacher for the math classes, Supercalculus had two teachers that trained and was in that class for approximately 2 weeks. That teacher has been pulled, even though while I sat at the Supercalculus parent meeting, it was represented that there would be two teachers there and that two teachers trained. That teacher's been pulled, and I'm wondering why we would even need a breakage if there is a math teacher in our district that could potentially pick up the loose class that might be needed.
Okay, so in the instance, I was at that night. I don't believe that it was represented that would be two teachers teaching the class. Two teachers did go through the training so that we could then, as the class began to grow, and it wasn't solely the responsibility of one teacher. Thus, the reason why we sent two teachers. Furthermore, one of those teachers is a new teacher to the district. That teacher, that is not her assignment. Her assignment is a 0.4 to other responsibilities within the district. So she is assigned 0.6 to the math department and 0.4 to our STEAM initiative. So she actually is not free at this time. She was in the very beginning of the year, and utilizing her to the maximum in the beginning of the year when that other assignment hadn't started yet, we did fold her into those classes to provide students with support. So she wasn't necessarily pulled. She wasn't assigned early on in the year and therefore providing some extra support.
The statement you had made earlier about not having the student requests that I'm speaking about, if you had, you might be talking about that at this moment because it is 2 months into the school year, so parents that paid the $500 or the exact $448 for the supercalculus obviously are going to be hesitant in removing their students, or their child, excuse me. And as far as being into the program or the course 2 months, it's going to be more difficult to make that decision. But my understanding is there was no question asked to the students other than select group of students recently, students that weren't doing well, if they would be interested in moving on or drop the class. They weren't specifically asked if there was a statistics class formed, would you move to it? So their understanding of the question was, are you going to drop the class or would you drop the class? Their response was, where would I go? What's the alternative? There was no alternative for them, so they walked away from, so you didn't get what I think is true information about how many kids really would move on. And if it was only asked in the supercalculus class, what about the other classes? What about the other math classes that may also have students willing to move on? We're talking about college applications. We're out of time. These kids, if they're not placed, you ask them as a district to work hard for 4 years, to increase their rigor, to take AP classes. We have students that did that, and now they're stuck. And this particular child, relying on what was said, now will have a college application with either a red flag or is now going to have to go back into a class with 1 month of work behind to make up at no fault of his own. And you're all telling me, if I'm understanding it, you'll get back to me. That we're out of time. There's no more getting back. So is that the answer? Are you all acceptable? That's okay? Because it's kind of mind-boggling. It's a college application. I'm sorry I'm upset, but this is serious, and it's not his fault. He's here.
It is heard, and we're sorry at that, and obviously we try to do something that's right for every kid that we possibly can. We don't have a teacher available right now to even teach a section if we told you we were going to have one for you. They've got to work some stuff out. You've made your points on what we're trying to accomplish, but some of it involves personnel and having to work on stuff that we just can't give you a concrete answer to right now. I apologize for that. We simply cannot.
Okay.
No, we don't think it's okay to be in this situation.
I just feel he deserved better from this district. And I think you failed him. I'm sorry.
Diane, I will get back to you tomorrow to speak to you about your concerns.
Stephanie Nilkins, 55 Acorn Lane. Congratulations on board week. I guess you're really earning it tonight. I was just curious about Common Core Algebra 2 and if we've made any progress in what's going on with that. I've tried unsuccessfully to get a list broken down in a manner that I could use it, that a layperson can use it. I was given different information, which I've already pointed out, that it was not usable for in an easy manner because it's a hard enough job teaching a kid extra math. Trust me, I know. I've done it before. I'm not willing to have my son give up the opportunity to take a known Regents exam, and I'm also not willing to wait until a last-minute plan comes up. I don't think that's fair to anyone, to the parents who have to drive back and forth to the school, to the kids, to anyone. So the sooner we have this information, I think it's imperative that that happens. Again, I've asked, it was decided at this meeting that what I had was a great idea. I've gotten several emails back saying, gee, you know what, I gave you something. Well, what was given was, it was too vague, and it doesn't work. And what I asked for was real specific. I have contacts over at State Ed. I spoke with someone in the curriculum area, and I have a contact over in assessment area. The assessment person felt I had quite the handle on this whole thing of what's gone on, not only this year, but the past 3 years. He wasn't, you know, it's just, you have kids now even that are struggling in Algebra 2 because what happened for them 2 years ago in Common Core Algebra 1 was, it wasn't exactly the same as even what happened last year. And they're at a loss now to do certain aspects of Algebra 2 because they didn't have that right background. Different things went on because, you know, it was our first year, blah, blah, blah. You're getting better. You're tweaking. But these kids are still at a loss, and it really isn't fair. So I'd like to know what's going on. I really don't want to wait until, you know, I'll come here every week, every other week, and I'm happy to ask. But I would just really like to see some more sense of urgency. I've talked about that year after year. I have a kid whose math education was basically derailed by Common Core. Derailed. Okay? I don't appreciate it. There's nothing you guys can do about it. But we can take a bad situation and try to make it better. Certainly providing information, specific, easy information, that if someone here is in charge of doing the curriculum, as far as that course is going, it should not really be that hard for them to look at this and say, we're covering this, we're covering this, we're not covering that, we're not covering that. And that needed to have happened several weeks ago when I asked for it. It really wasn't that hard. And I'm very disappointed. So I'd like to know what kind of response I can get for that.
One thing I can tell you is I know on the agenda today for later that we'll be voting on is for additional review sessions, for Algebra 2 review sessions, three teachers up to 6 hours each. So we are recognizing that we need to put some extra supports in, and we are working with the teachers and trying to provide that.
But is that enough? And again, you also want to think about splitting up between honor students who are looking at this one way, who, are, by the way, are struggling, who, by the way, are looking to get out of classes that they also can't get out of. There's no place for them to go, especially 10th graders who advanced, who now have health ninth period because they were interested in maybe being in marching band, and they're totally stuck in a bad situation as well. So there's lots of kids that maybe you haven't heard about. You know, I could put the word out on social media if you want to hear about it. I know people are calling me and PMing me while other things are going on social media because they're afraid to put their name out there, and that's what happens too. They're afraid to rock the boat. They don't want to get on the bad side of a teacher or, you know, there's a lot of reasons why you may not hear all the things that parents hear because people will talk about it, but if you're not proactive in trying to help a solution, you know, again, if we know what's going on in this class, I'm willing to, you know, undertake this myself. And, you know, it's my kid. I'm the one who has him forever. You have him for a couple of years. You know, but in terms of those review classes, you can't put the honors kids with the Regents level kids. They're on two totally different levels. In fact, I don't even know how the Regents kids are surviving in that class. Honestly, I just don't even know, looking at the work that's gone on there. So I really hope that this just doesn't become a really big problem where you're going to end up with dozens of kids needing summer school or whatever it is, or needing to retake this class. I think you really need to keep a very close eye on what's gone on, what's been added into that curriculum, what's been taken out, even what's still being done in honors that isn't part of Common Core or isn't even part of the Regents class, yet it's still being done in honors math. Do we even have time for that? It used to be a great thing, but do we still have time for that? We might not. Right now, these kids have to get through this course plus all that trig. And so maybe the focus really has to be, you know what, we thought about this, but we have to revamp it again. And it's still early enough to do something and try to make it. I'm not saying we can fix it, but can we try to make it better? You know, I'm just not seeing that.
You mentioned reaching out to State Education Department on the topic issue that you're requesting. Did they provide you with any guidance documents from the state ed?
Not documents. What I've had was conversations is where I went through things with them to try to get a handle on what was going on. But I do have two very good names, and the assessment person was actually, you know, I was explaining to him, you know, look, we always have these regents early, you know, all those other situations that, you know, our kids were really put in a bad place. And 3 years of this, that's 6 weeks less of math education that they didn't have. And it just, you know, any other thing that you can do for us, maybe 6 hours sounds a lot to you. Maybe you need 12 hours. Maybe you need to be figuring a lot more than that. I don't know what it is. This is just, you can't even, there is no tutors to be had for this. Even at $100 an hour, which is the minimum you're going to spend, there are no tutors to even be had for this. So that, you know, it's a problem for us.
And I just want to add, when we get to the agenda item, this is just one step in the review session. So as we spoke about at the Algebra 2 Parent Night, that there would be multiple sessions throughout the year. This session here is to review the algebra topics in response to the parent requests at the meeting that some of the topics that kids had 2 years ago needed a refresher. And thus the reason for this initial review session. In addition, we spoke about, and it's in the PowerPoint on the math website, that talks about the other sessions that would be offered periodically throughout the year. No one is saying that this is an easy
undertake,
but the teachers are consistently looking at what's needed. We haven't received any further information from State Ed than what we've shared with parents to date. So when we have information, we are sharing it. You have received documents, apparently not in the format that you want
them
in.
They're unusable.
But
and I pointed out where they were unusable, and I never got answers. So they're unusable. And I keep on making the same request. So I have to say I'm extremely disappointed. This is the easiest way to know, not only for me, but for any parent, to look at this document and say, hey, these are the questions. If your kid could do these four questions, you're done with that part of the Regents. Your kid could do these five questions, you're done with that part of the Regents. It can't get any simpler than that. So the fact that that's not readily available for me or anybody else, tutors don't even want to touch this because they don't know the differences between the two curriculums either. I've made calls. I've tried.
Okay, Stephanie, I've got to say, I think that most of us realize that your kids have been the guinea pigs and that it's broken. And we have to, and we have an obligation as the Board of Education to help these kids get through. And I think when we talk about the math later on, we'll talk about the trig piece and talk about adding more classes or whatever we have to do so the kids can absolutely go through. I don't feel it's fair to parents to have tutors all over the place and everything else.
But you can't even find them.
It's a very expensive proposition. Not only that, you know, when you look at other districts that are offering a different math than we are, I think we have to really turn around and say we have an onus and a responsibility to help these kids, so we'll be talking about it later.
I appreciate that, Ginger. Just so you know, I don't know what course you're thinking of doing in terms of helping kids with algebra, but right now there's a test going on this week that has to do with manipulations that, quite frankly, if they had done more of them, of those sorts of things in algebra, one, they probably wouldn't be as far gone as they are now. I just tutored someone in it tonight, and it was a disaster. It was like starting from square zero. So it's just something to think about that maybe, again, that sense of urgency, these kids are struggling right now. You know, I'm just...
Thank you.
You know, thanks.
All right. Do I have a motion for routine business? Emily, Seth, any holds, separations, discussions? All those in favor? New business. Unfinished business. Do I have a motion for recommendation to approve an agreement with the ACDS? Debbie, Ginger, discussions? All those in favor? New business, new club at Matlin Middle School, POB Middle School. Ginger, Emily, discussions? All those in favor? Additional staff development proposals, 15-16. Do I have a motion? Seth, Debbie, discussions? All those in favor? 11.3, Board of Education approved field trips for POB JFK with various states and athletics departments of varsity baseball spring training. Emily, Ginger, discussions? All those in favor? Fall algebra review sessions. Do I have a motion? Ginger, Emily, discussions? All those in favor? Motion to go into executive session for matters of personnel.
Are we going to discuss any of that? We said we were going to sort of discuss.
Discuss. We didn't. All right. You want to discuss it more? I thought we had it.
Okay.
Sessions.
All right.
We can still discuss it. It's fine.
No, I just don't want to be limited. I think I know it's his number to be determined. I want people to understand that there's no closure on this
Simply
number.
Phase one.
It's a, right, as many as we're going to need.
I'd also like to say, yeah, I think this board is very, and the administration is very alive to this issue. And, you know, I look at social media a lot, too, as we all do. And as a board member, I have to say I really wish the community would assume that we are concerned about this issue also and that we believe the administration is taking steps to address this and to assume both our goodwill towards children and our desire to be proactive.
Well said. Motion to go into executive session for matters of personnel. Ginger, Debbie, all those in favor? Everyone have a good night. Thank you very much.
Thank you.